velvety soft bath hands and some real thud in the back, leading to moments like this. And McConaughey, and he's snaking his way through. And in Clark de Glanville, fucking a singer is standing, waiting, pouncing. Big Joe makes his a double. Oh, he's gone through on his own. Josh Matabesi, ender of worlds, destroyer of walls. Spencer whips it away. Beautifully done. Gathered, scored. The two young bucks who underline their love of this place earlier in the week. Orlando Bailey and Max Ajomo conspire in thrilling fashion.
Hello and welcome to the Bath Rugby Plug, the rugby podcast by the fans, for the fans, plugging the boys in blue, black and white. The bounce back boys in blue, black and white to talk an extremely satisfying win on Saturday. I'm joined as ever by my good friend and fellow Bath fan, Tom. Tom, how are you?
Very, very good, mate. Revenge is sweet. And yeah, you picked the wrong weekend to go and fill up the car G. A great bounce back, a great result, 5 points on the road. You know, the first win at Sandy Park for 8 years. Yeah, great Saturday.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, frustrating that we were there for the European defeat. But the extra fans that were ribbing me after the game on that Saturday after the European game, I hope the drubbing at Toulouse was worth it, boys. Yeah.
Tough for them, to be fair. That was absolute savagery from Toulouse in that second half. But they were there, and I think I'd rather be there than not be there. But yeah, from our point of view, just how good to right that wrong. And to, you're not often in rugby do you get the chance so soon after, in 2 weeks after, at the same place against a very, very similar side. 5 points, so important as well. And I do think as well, looking ahead to the latter part of the season and crucial stage of the season, how much confidence a bounce back win does just for the psyche.
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, the eagle-eared of you will notice Tom is over Zoom. I don't think he's got any reports of any rugby he's been watching over there to give us. This is the last week where we will not be in person. So thank you for sticking with us during this time and the slightly odd times of recording and odd times of watching a 5:30 Saturday kickoff, I believe, Tom.
It was tough. It was about midnight kickoff. It was a late one, but you have been very active on the WhatsApp chats, which was much appreciated, keeping the eyes open. And yeah, it was that classic case of we got the win. I was absolutely buzzing on adrenaline, but it was 2 a.m. and I knew I had to be up in a few hours. So a strange one. And for Saris on Friday night, I will be at whatever they say, 5,000 feet. So I'm hoping that the Wi-Fi on Turkish Airlines, which I've already scoped out, I'm hoping that will do the trick and I'm able to stream that one. Otherwise, it's going to be a very nervous land back in Heathrow. And then, as you say, we will be back together for the remainder of the season. Looking forward to it.
What I can kind of imagine Turkish Airlines to look a little bit like, Tom, I don't know if you saw this clip. You're not a football fan and not a women's football fan, certainly. But when the Australian women's sides were playing a semi-final in the Women's World Cup on Qantas Airlines, literally every screen bar one was showing the game, just to kind of give some scope as to how many people were watching that. I can imagine it'd be exactly the same on Turkish Airlines for the key top of the table clash, Bath v Saracens.
I'll be shocked if it's not part of the featured in-flight entertainment, mate, put it that way.
And what a massive, I mean, we joke, but it is an absolutely massive game. And we'll come on to talk a little bit about that at the end of this podcast and talk about a wild weekend of rugby. Your favourite team, Bristol, have screeched their way into the playoffs off the back of some obscene rugby. We're going to talk all about the Premiership landscape and what the results mean. But, of course, we will start by breaking down in some detail the win at Sandy Park on Saturday. Before I do that, I must implore you to check out Tom Dunn's Instagram. You might see some buns on there if you search Tom Dunn on socials at the moment. Maybe 10% of the people will get that joke. But if you want a fantastic BAP then do check out Tom Dunn's Black and White Butchers Instagram, because, yeah, that is where you'll find his catering and events company. And if you are at the Rep Friday night, get there a little bit early and check out those BAPs, because, yeah, they are well worth a look. Have I done that joke enough, do you think? Do you think I got another one in there?
I think you've hammered that home, but, yeah, you can't beat them.
Certainly not. Yeah, Black and White Butchers, the Bath Rugby plug, brought to you by Tom Dunn's Black and White Butchers, supporting us as ever. Tom, let's kind of get into the game and maybe take a sort of whole overview look at the game. How much, I guess, do you think Bath benefited from having a week off? And how much do you think Exeter struggled, having gone to Toulouse on that Sunday and lost? Or do you think that ultimately, no matter what had happened last weekend, we were the better side?
I think it was significant, to be totally honest. You know, those are two very different preparations leading up to that game. As I say, Exeter being absolutely hammered and physically battered by Toulouse, particularly in that second half, a shortened training week given the Sunday game, only three changes from that the side they put out. So it's the same guys running out a few days later, whereas we had a full 2 weeks to lick our wounds, fully focus on Exeter, get guys who were doubts back fit, like Ted Hill, which was brilliant that he came straight back in. And I think you did see that we had that extra bit of freshness, and that showed compared to 2 weeks ago. Exeter, on the other hand, they ran out of steam a little bit, but I still think that they were in the game for large parts of it, as we can get onto. The other difference, obviously, compared to 2 weeks ago, was that we weren't ravaged by injuries, and as we spoke about, that led to chaos in the back line. And also, just finally, on conditions, they were much more benign, and I think the fact that there wasn't that huge wind in one direction as there was 2 weeks ago kind of lessened or made less significant the home advantage that Exeter had, obviously more used to those conditions. So I think there was slightly different context, but I think we came into it probably better favourites, as it were, just because of the Toulouse game and the lead up to you know, in terms of preparation.
I think that's right, but I do think that it probably wasn't the key factor. I think that these teams are, at this point in their development, relatively similar. And I think if you play at Sandy Park, that's a game that I think Exeter probably win 6 times out of 10, Bath win 4 times out of 10. So I think to split the two games, I think is about right. We maybe won this week a little bit more comfortably, you know, getting the full 5 points to none for Exeter, which is key for the Premiership table. I think that is probably down to the fact that they had a much more difficult preparation. But I do think that even if it had been equal levels of preparation, I do think that we're probably a chance to win one of the two games at Sandy Park, if that makes sense. And yeah, you know, it also needs to be pointed out that we were without some key guys, Tom, in the back line in particular. We learned since our last podcast that Cameron Redpath has sustained a significant ankle injury and Finn Russell sustained a significant groin injury. Just how big a miss were those guys on Saturday? I think if you listen to the TNT coverage, which we can maybe talk a bit about, but we maybe flogged that horse in the past, it seemed like Bath had no chance. How significant were those injuries, and how significant are those injuries going to be for the rest of the season, do you think?
I think the Finn injury is significant, particularly as we get on to the playoffs, if he's still unavailable. You know, he's a world-class 10, and although Orlando Bailey and, you know, BT weren't particularly, weren't at pains to point this out, although he's got a good amount of experience, I think you said 72 or 82 appearances for Bath and was our main guy there last season. The control, as I said, and creativity that Russell's brought, I think has really benefited us and benefited those guys outside him. So I think it's significant, but I think it's not any one player can win you a game, can lose you a game, right? And I think we showed that Orlando Bailey is more than a competent stand-in for Finn Russell, and that we have more than enough quality elsewhere to still beat decent side. So, you know, I think that 10-12 axis of Russell and Redpath is, you know, one of the best in the league, and it, you know, has been great for us. But I think there are able guys to step in.
Yeah, I think my view is, I think we probably can't win the thing if Finn but in particular Finn, if Finn doesn't return, I think we probably don't have the ceiling of a team that can win a semi-final and a final. I think listening to Johan speak before the game, I think I'm pretty confident he's going to be back at some point. You know, there's a decent time now between here and the semi-final and the final, you know.
7 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, there's quite a long period of time. So I think if we get to the playoffs, get Russell back, I think that gives us a chance. But I think what we have become is we've become a much more complete side, and we can win in many different ways. And I think as we move into this game, Tom, we won this game. And Landy had a good game, right? He had a decent game. But we won this game through the kind of physicality and dominance of our forwards and of our scrum half, and you've got to win games in different ways. I think losing Finn probably restricts a little bit what you can do with Lawrence, what you can do with the wingers in particular, because at this point I don't think Landy's got the game to get them into the game as much. But that's not the only way we can win a bloody game of rugby. We can win it by picking six big forwards and out beasting a side that pride them on out beasting sides. Yeah. Right? They've got Harvey Skinner at 10. We've all given respect to Harvey Skinner. That's not a world beater. You can win games through other ways. And I think we prove that. And I think we can continue to prove that for the remainder of the season. Whether it wins you a title, maybe not.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think 7 weeks, hopefully, given the tone of what JVG was saying and the fact that Finn, you know, was kind of walking around, looked quite happy, he doesn't get phased by much. I think 7 weeks, hopefully, and 8 weeks total for an injury like that, hopefully you'd think would be achievable. I said whatever it was 2 weeks ago that I think in 2 weeks' time at Sandy Park, I expect us to throw the ball around a bit and try and beat them in the way that we beat Sale with some more expansive rugby. How wrong was I? And I think the game plan was absolutely spot on. 6-2 split, as you say, and knowing that they were going to be a little bit heavy legged, given the schedule that they'd had compared to us, I think it was spot on, that game plan. It was built purely on patient intensity, never letting Exeter catch a breath. Three penalties in that first half an hour. We go to the corner. The third time, we're bang in front of the sticks and we go to the corner. We never let them off the hook. We brought those forwards on, which made it was a nightmare for them on the game line at the breakdown when Bayless Reed and others came on. We just gradually wore them down. You know, that first half, G, was, I find it quite strange. It was almost like a mirror image of the game 2 weeks ago. We had so much ball. We had 68% possession in that first half. And particularly in that first half an hour, we just battered the door down, made them tackle, made them work, made them defend. And eventually we reaped the rewards, you know, later in that half and into the second half. So yeah, great physicality. I thought a great game plan. And yeah, you know, the best teams are those that can beat teams in different ways, and we're certainly showing that.
Yeah, the first half was almost identical to the first half 2 weeks ago, right? You know, one try in the far right hand corner after a little bit of patient build up and a pack, and another try after a lanky forward makes a breakaway, and we've scored two tries. It was bizarre that the kind of similarities that it showed. I do think that, you know, we went into the Sheds 14-0 up at halftime, and I do think it potentially could have been even more than that. Such was our dominance. You know, we had one drop ball on 5 meters. We missed a line out pretty close to the line as well on 19 minutes. And yeah, you're right. There wasn't much flash about that first half performance, but I think we pretty much dominated in every area. And I think, 14-0 may be about right. You know, the late Yule's try probably took it to where it should have been. But I do think that we were definitely the better side in that first half. It wasn't great stuff. There was a lot of kicking. I think both sides did even themselves out a little bit, quite similar styles. But I do think that we were definitely justified going in 14-0 up where we went.
I think on the point of kicking, one clear tactic and I think one clear improvement from 2 weeks ago was how we kicked. You know, Ben Spencer was much more money off, you know, with his box kicks, and we won that aerial battle as a result. But I think one thing that was really noticeable was those kind of tactical little short kicks that went in behind and that stretched the defence. Extra on flying out the line quite narrow, leaving Josh Hodge at fullback so much space to cover. And it didn't quite work in that first half. Landy put one through, Max put one through as well, and they didn't quite go to hand. But you could see that it was stretching Exeter. And obviously, you know, as we saw in that second half, those started to pay dividends in the case of both the tries, which were from kicks through and then Exeter fumbles. So I thought that was positive. What else was I going to say? Oh, on your point about the go on.
Well, it's great that they've obviously watched what happened 2 weeks ago and adjusted. The game plan wasn't perfect 2 weeks ago. I think they probably tried to kick long and high a little bit too much. And I think they identified that defence that Exeter are going to play with basically Sladey going and then them trying to keep you in that area, either the long pass over the top to the winger or the sort of kick, the attacking kick over the top is so, so deadly. We put their back three under so much more pressure than we did 2 weeks ago. Yeah. So yeah, I thought that was really, really, you know, clever from Bath. And I think ultimately in the second half, it probably meant that they weren't quite as quick to rush up just because they knew the threat that we posed, which is ultimately the point of that tactic, right?
Yeah, definitely. Just returning to your point about the dominance we had in that first 40, I think whilst we could have had more than 14, equally, we only had 7 just on the cusp of half time. Exeter were bearing down on our line. And you're thinking, if Exeter get a score here and go into the sheds pretty much level, they're mentally are going to be thinking, we've held out them. We've been under siege there for most of that half and we've held them out. As it was, Ben Spencer getting that turn just on half time. He has, you know, he's one of the smallest guys on the pitch and he puts his head in the spokes as he always do. But even with bravery, you have absolutely no right to get that jackal. And he does. And he comes out and he's down on his haunches, almost Ben Stokes fashion, the hero, but the injured hero. And we, you know, Gallagher launches it out. And then Charlie Yules, who's having a great couple of games, great awareness, little pirouette, gallops away, has the awareness to give it to Spencer, to offload it to Spencer. And suddenly, that's a 14-point swing, right? It could have been 7-7 quite easily. And suddenly, we're at the other end of the pitch. Ben Spencer calls another one in from the right-hand touchline. And it's 14-0. If you're Exeter, that 2 minutes is an absolute gut punch because you've left a lot out and then to concede just before half-time. Well, it's the most to concede. So those last 2 minutes of the second half, and I know you weren't thinking this, but they made me confident that it was kind of our day.
Yeah, I was not confident throughout the whole...
Mate, I was delirious. It was like 1 a.m, but you know.
Yeah, and I was... I was not feeling confident pretty much until 79th minute when it was pretty much mathematically impossible. I felt like they had a comeback in it, and the fact that we didn't get...
Well,
and that Sladey was going to nail the winning kick. It was just running through my mind, mate.
Yeah, there was one moment when Henry Slade stuck one really tight to the corner from it was an unbelievable kick. And it was kind of reminiscent of obviously what he did in that final. And I heard reports of that period that you were pacing around the room. You were really getting your steps in. But watching Bath, mate, it's a free workout, to be honest.
Yeah, watching them on the telly is just not actually... I just don't know if I enjoy it. Like, especially, you know, I wasn't drinking this weekend. Nothing was relaxing me. And the fact that we got out to a lead, but not probably a big enough lead, was just, it was extremely stressful. And I was pretty stressed. And then, as a Man United fan, which I'm bringing up way too much on this podcast, the Sunday wasn't...
I don't even know. I hope other listeners share. I don't actually know what went on with that. So you keep referencing Man United, mate, but you're not getting any nibbles here.
Yeah, not a very relaxing Sunday either, certainly. But yeah, absolutely on Spencer. Kind of, you know, get yourself a man that can do both, Jackal, and then outpace everybody to score. In, should have gone under the sticks, but he got the penalty anyway, so.
And I just want to reiterate something. I know lots of people would have been listening to the you know, the TNT coverage and all the Russell chat. Finn Russell's an unbelievable rugby player. I don't have any doubt about that. But let's be absolutely clear. The most important player in our squad is Ben Spencer. And there would not be nearly the amount of discussion if he was out and Lewis Schroeder was stepping in. But it would be much more impactful to our chances. He is fantastic. And he steps up every time. You know, the kicking, as we've spoken about, being on the end of that try, the Jackal, control of the pace of the game, as he always adapts so well to. Being first receiver a lot of the time and taking pressure off Landy, particularly from, you know, six-man lineouts where Alfie would step in at nine. Just little things that he does. He's such a winner. He really is. He was absolutely fantastic. And I think, yeah, listeners probably hopefully share our view if they've listened to this podcast for a long time, but he just does it every time.
And kick conversions from anywhere.
Yeah, he's
a beast. And it was a captain's performance when we really needed one, because yeah, that was a big game in our season, and Spenny absolutely stood up, and the ex-captain stood up as well. You know, I've been pretty critical of Charlie Yules in the past, and I think fair enough, but he is playing some really lovely rugby recently. I thought Exeter 2 weeks ago, he was fantastic. And again, on Saturday, yeah, he was brilliant. That moment was great. His break, and you know, he was getting a bit of stick, I think, for trying the sidestep, which I think people are completely missing the point there. You know, the way that is taught is you run to one shoulder, that guy tackles you, which makes the offload easy. He wasn't trying to go for the corner. That was brilliant work from Yulesy.
Cutting a nice line there. Yeah,
I think he's playing some good stuff. There's some interesting battle going on for that 4-5 shirt at the moment. We'll get to a signing they've made coming in next season. But he's, you know, somehow, and not wrongly for me, he's probably the first lock on the team sheet now. So massive credit to him. He's bounced back well and is playing some good stuff. We must get into the second half, Tom. We did say we'd try and keep this brief, and there's so much other news and bits and bobs to get to. Ex-Bath man Ollie Woodburn did score to bring it to 7-14. But almost immediately, Max crossed over for his first Prem try of the season, a moment that at 2 a.m. for you, Tom, must have got you off your seat.
I was doing my first share of pacing around the hotel room. I love nothing more than a Max try. And as you say, I've been a little bit sparse this year for all the good stuff that he's produced. And I don't know, even though he would have enjoyed that one so much, obviously he came from Exeter. Great kick. Like, he had nothing on. Little sidestep as he does. So elusive, so skillful, so quick. And then threads it through. And the nine who had a bit of a difficult day, fumbles it and he goes over the line, and it looked like they enjoyed that. And again, for Exeter, that is straight after you've scored. It's pretty much from the restart. That is an absolute, you know, another gut punch. And, you know, we did get the bounce of the ball. There were some errors. I mean, we can talk about the Miles Reid try, which ultimately came from, was it Bailey who kicked it through?
Yeah.
And Ollie Woodburn fumbles, and then Orlando Bailey has chased it up and scrags him, and we get the penalty from a good counter ruck from that. So again, another extra mistake, but you've got to make, you know, teams pay for their mistakes, and yeah, we did that really well.
Yeah, they did. They loved that Max try. We put a new profile picture on our Twitter at Bath Rugby Plug, which has got a fair bit of traction. They loved it, he loved it. He won't love the one try in the Premiership this season graphic which followed, but yeah, a deserved try for Max, who triple threat is coming to the fore, certainly. You're right, both coming from kicks through from replacement 10 and 12, which is lovely to see. And you're right, Reid did get that fourth try, the bonus point try, to take it to 26-7. Exeter got another try, 14-26, which is how it finished. We held on an absolutely crucial turnover from, I think it was Josh Bayliss on the TV. They were crediting it with Alfie Barbary. I think Bayliss got on that, but either one of them, when it looked like Exeter might be in with a chance of getting back into the game, to deny them you know, not even getting within seven, to deny them no points, to come away exactly mm-hmm. with four tries. Bristol, a reality check. You don't have to score 85 to get 5 points. 26 is enough, boys. So, good win. And I think a gritty and mature performance, not flashy, but to go in there, not one in 8 years, come away with 5 points, that will give them some real satisfaction, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, we spoke about the 6-2 split last week or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was. I think in this instance, the benefit of being able to bring on Miles Reid, Jacques Duplessis and Josh Bayliss, along with a full set of front rowers, they made an absolute menace of themselves, those two back rowers in particular. The breakdown was an area where we absolutely dominated. We had 15 turnovers in the game, and we definitely had the referee on side there. Final point, and you know, we almost don't even mention this anymore, which is madness given some of the things that we've spoken about on this podcast. Our defence once again was brilliant. You know, particularly close to our own line, we were so physical. We're well organised. We're fit. You know, JP has done a brilliant job. Again, the amount of, you know, the momentum that Exeter had in that second half and the time that they spent down near our line, which was very stressful as viewers, that would have resulted in 4, 5, 6 tries, you know, a few seasons ago when we weren't as well organised. So, yeah, I think, you know, a credit to the defence as well. We should just quickly, and I'll give you a yes or no. I'll give you a yes. Yeah, yes or no, and then you can qualify. The Feyenoord-Vossu Will Muir challenge. Were you happy with that? I imagine you weren't in your stressed state.
Yeah, Saturday, 6 o'clock, whenever it happened, I was, I think he gets away with it. He definitely got away with a deliberate knock-on. Just because he then tries to catch it doesn't mean it's not a deliberate knock-on, but that's a separate point. I think upon looking at it 3 or 4 times, I think the ref got it right. So, no? Is that the answer to the question?
Yeah, we'll agree. I think those are sorts of rugby incidents that we're happy to see. And Will Muir got away with one of those earlier on in the season, let's not forget. But I know you want to move on, so I'll just mention, I thought other top performers during the game, Tom Dunn, I thought, was really industrious throughout. Alfie Barbary was everywhere and making a menace to himself. And
just on Alfie. Just,
like, yeah.
You know, he carried 10 times in the first half, carried 10 times, beat 5 defenders. Guess how many meters?
5?
16. That is hard yard. Yeah. That is hard yard.
It's hard yards. And I've never seen anyone more willing and keen to carry than he is. It's brilliant. And it's the sort of energy we need. And he galvanises players with the energy and with that haircut as well.
I think he felt like he had a point to prove after that drop ball. We keep referencing the game, but a couple of weeks ago, I really felt like he was out to prove a point. I'm not convinced by the 6-2 still. And I think if we're going to do it, let's just pick a 9 and 10. Will Butt didn't get on. So if we're going to do it, let's just pick a 9 and 10. And then if you get an injury to a winger or a centre, it's not as disastrous. I think that's where I've decided to come down on that. But a great win and leaves us second in the table. Momentarily, we slipped down to third after Saracens beat Gloucester. We're 5 points clear of Quinns in fifth. It is Quinns v Saints on Saturday at Twickenham, the big summer kickoff there. So that is a massive game for Bath.
Yeah.
We will take on Saracens on Friday night. So we'll have now to put our marker down, hopefully, before in what is some huge games. Bristol have snuck themselves into fourth. I mentioned that they beat a barely championship level Newcastle side. Let's have it right. 85-14 on Sunday. I've spoken to someone that was actually at the game on that day, and he said that it should have been more. To be quite frank, they butchered chances. Bristol kicked the ball away 4 times in 80 minutes, which is a remarkable stat. So, fascinating top of the table battle. And we're going to talk about the game against Saracens in a bit. But we must talk, Tom, about the new signings that were announced over the week. I think we're going to leave the re-signings until maybe the end of the season. I'm not sure if there's more to come. I think maybe we're doing this because we just want to wait for the Roy McConachy re-signing. If that doesn't happen, we riot. But we're going to talk about that later. What we must talk about, though, is three new signings they have announced. Ross Maloney, the first one, joining Bath on a 3-year deal. 29-year-old, 175 appearances for Leinster. Quick one on that.
Yep. Okay. known for being a line-out caller, very consistent, reliable player with a good work rate. Very much kind of in the Charlie Yule's mould of second row, rather than kind of a, you know, the big bruising bully of a second row, very much in the role of RG Seinman, who of course Leinster have signed and probably ultimately is replacing him along with McCarthy in Leinster. So, you know, I think clearly a solid player and has been involved with a very successful team and has been a regular in that side, albeit less so in the last season or so. I'm not convinced that he's exactly the sort of second row we want, to be honest. But clearly a player of high quality and a three-year contract. So, I think clear quality, but slightly surprised about the mould of second row we've gone for there.
Is Francois Van Wijk from Leicester the type of replacement loose head that we've been looking for?
Solid, yeah, solid player. I think decent scrummager, 160 or so premiership appearances with Saints and Leicester. Bit of a shame for Arthur Caldwell, to be honest. He's only played 121 minutes this season, and every time I've seen him, I've been impressed. So, you know, he'll be one down in the pecking order. On the flip side, I think it means that Thomas De Toit will hopefully be moving to pretty much full-time tight head, which, from what I've seen, is his better side, and that will only benefit us.
Yeah, 25 now, Arthur Caldwell. So he's not a pup anymore. And then finally, and probably the headline, I would say, Guy Pepper, the 20-year-old from Newcastle, who is shone in a dreadful team, let's have it right. 22 appearances for Guy Pepper. I just want to read out the 14 names we've got currently listed as a back rower for Bath. So you've got Abdul Al-Karim, Alfie Barbary, Josh Bayliss, Chris Kluter, Yaku Kutsir, Thompson Cowan, Mackenzie Graham, Ted Hill, Nathan Merrigan, Miles Reid, Ethan Staddon, George Timmons, JJ Tonks and Sam Underhill. That's 14 guys who are listed currently in the first team squad. Eight of them are probably first teamers. Guy Pepper's, you know, no doubt an exciting prospect. Reminds me a little bit of Sam Underhill. But is this where we needed to strengthen, Tom?
Yeah, I think definitely not. it feels like we've kind of picked him up because obviously he's very highly rated. He's 20-year-old and we want a piece of him. We don't want anyone else to have him. But I struggle to see where he fits in, right? Like, is he a better player than Miles Reid right now? No. Is he better than Josh Bayliss right now? No. Is he better than Chris Kluter? I don't know. Is he big enough to maybe move into second row as he grows out? No. I don't think so. He's only 6'3". Yeah. So it's a little bit of a strange one. You know, whether there are a couple of guys that are out of contract in possibly Chris Kluter, one I can think of, JJ Tonks is a guy that you highlighted could be as well, but you know, he's been anywhere close to featuring. So I struggled to see where he fits in, to be honest. But it doesn't take away from the fact that he's a very exciting young guy. So yeah, succession planning maybe, but I don't see how much game time he gets next season.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it doesn't fulfil much confidence in those young guys coming through. You know, some of them Bath fans will be a lot less familiar with Graham, Thompson Cowan, Staddon maybe. But they're not young, you know, Merrigan. They're not young boys, these lads. You know, they are in and around, if not older than the 20-year-old Guy Pepper. So, yeah, I thought this was a pretty bizarre signing. It's been rumoured for some time, but I never kind of thought it would definitely happen. That's not taking anything away from what looks like a nice young player. But it just, you know, isn't a backup scrum half more important than this? Or, you know, a slightly better backup hooker or, you know, Rory McConachy. Isn't that more important?
Yeah, agree.
Let us know on socials on this one, because I think there's been a lot of positivity about the Guy Pepper signing. And yeah, I found it a little bit confusing. So at Bath Rugby Plug on Twitter, let us know.
And does he get into your second team, your second Bath team? That's what you've got to be asking yourself. I don't think that he does, but yeah, Johan knows best, as we've seen so far. But let us know what you think.
Absolutely. And just briefly on injuries then. So the final bit of news this season. So Chris Clutter still unavailable. Tom de Glanville out until the end of May. Sam Harris was a disappointing one to learn that he's been ruled out for the rest of the season. Cam Redpath and Finn Russell we mentioned. And both of these, all of these injuries leave us pretty short at 10 and 15 with Cam Redpath and Matt Gallagher respectively being the guys that have featured that are recognised that in those positions. One name that I think we probably may see on the bench at some point this season is George Warboys. He's been in and around before, and he's just led Chinner RFC to the National League One Championship. So they've been promoted to the Championship, and you're laughing, Tom, but this is the content. This is the content people come for. He's been tearing it up for Chinner. I was reading a few of their match reports, and particularly the game they played on Saturday, which took them to the Championship. I think he scored a hat trick, and yeah, under the tutelage of ex-Quins man Nick Easter, who's the head coach there, he's been playing some great stuff. So I imagine we may see him, a young, exciting 10, come onto the bench.
Well, yeah, Chinner, you know, a club that's closer to my heart than listeners will know. You know, a very good friend of mine was 10 at Chinner a few years ago. They were League One at that point, and he wasn't able to bring them up. So if George Warboys can do that, he must be a special player.
And that, Tom, brings us from Chinner to Saracens. A pretty big game at the Rec. Friday night, sold out, can't get a ticket for love nor quite a bit of money. this is a tough one for Bath and a massive one for the playoffs, but also for the home playoffs as well. I think the way it's shaping out at the moment is that Saints are flying a little bit. Bath and Saris are kind of back and forth, second and third. And then it's probably going to be maybe one of the other teams. Maybe I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but that's how at the moment I think it is trending. So for the playoffs and for the home playoffs, this, Tom, is an absolutely huge game.
Yeah, it's massive. I mean, every single game is massive at this point. But as you say, Saris are closest rivals in second. And, you know, you'd expect us to get 5 points at Newcastle. You might even expect Saints to put out a weaker side in the final game of the fixture. So you'd hope, touch wood and keep everything crossed, that we are now going to make top four, which is, you know, if it happens, is brilliant. But you've got to think that we're in a good position now with that 5-point win. You've got to be confident. However, and I don't want to get ahead of myself again, history has shown that home semi-finals, I can't be on talking like this, but history has shown that home semi-finals are so important. So, you know, the difference between playing Saris or, God forbid, Bristol or whoever at the Rec compared to you know, at Allianz Park or even at Ashton Gate, I mean, can you even imagine, is I think quite significant. So yeah, this game is absolutely huge.
Yeah, you're right. It's massive. And yeah, I think the worst possible outcome, as I see it, is probably a trip to the Allianz, because we'll probably lose. And it's also shit. I've never been there, and there's a reason for that. So yeah, if we want to avoid that, this is a key game for us to win. But I think it's a really tough one for us to win, Tom. Saracens are a 5-point favourites generally with the bookies. They're out of Europe like Bath are. Last dance for Owen Farrell and for a few of these boys. And my word, in the Premiership, do they look a strong side? So I wasn't confident last week against Exeter, admittedly, proven to be wrong, rarity. But I'm not confident again this week against Saracens, I must admit. They've got the boys that everybody will know playing some great stuff. But then those two Argentinians that they've added in, Gonzalez in the back row and Sinti at outside centre, I think have kind of really improved them this season. And they've been key guys. So, yeah, Saracens come loaded knowing this is a massive game, and I think are a massive threat.
Yeah, I think so. But let's not forget, whilst they've grown into this season really well at points, and particularly in the early part of the campaign, they were very, very beatable. We beat them away at the Allianz Park by 9 points, didn't give them a single point in that game. The week before that, they got battered by Exeter, a team that we've just beaten. 65 points to 10. So whilst the
this is a different side.
It is. But you know, the side that we played back in October still had plenty of quality in it, albeit they were missing, you know, some really key figureheads like Owen Farrell, Jamie George, Mario Toje. So I think, yeah, with the addition of those guys, it's so tough. And yeah, I watched some of the highlights against Gloucester, who are, you know, a struggling team, but Saracens look so composed. There is so much international quality and experience in their ranks. I do think they're very, very difficult to beat. However, our home record this season and last is very, very strong. We've tended to finish seasons really well under JVG at a grand sample size of one. And I think the way we're playing, I think, you know, as Chris Robshaw famously said prior to the 2015 World Cup, we always back ourselves at home.
That went well. You fancy this one then, do you?
I don't know. I mean, I'm going to be incredibly stressed either way. but I think it will be incredibly tight. I'd probably, and I hate to say this, slightly edge Saracens just on the quality that they have. And I do think the Farrell swan song is potentially inevitably going to be written. And I completely agree that I just don't want to go there for the semi-finals. I think that's the hardest game you can have, to be honest. So I think Saris might edge us, but I still think we've got a chance of at least getting a couple of points, if not scraping a very narrow win. And let's not forget, you know, we're a couple of points ahead of them. 2 points, we get 2 points, they get four, we're level. We've got then a nice run and we can finish ahead of them and run it all over again for the semi-final.
Yeah, I personally think they are the best team in the league. I think I'd rather go to Franklin's Gardens than go to the Allianz, come fourth rather than come third, if it is to be an away game. But you're right, bonus points in a losing cause would be key. And maybe we're being a little bit too negative here. We've shown at home we're a really, really difficult side to beat. So, yeah, I think they're going for sort of an 80s theme, I think, at the Rec on Friday. So let's hope we can roll back the years to when we were the dominant side in England and Saris were nothing before the cheating scandal that will inevitably mar them forever. So, let's hope we can.
you're salty already, mate. But I think the model to beat this season has been to bully them up front. Their scrum has really struggled this year. You know, a bit of an aging Mako Funapola. The loss of Vincent Cott has been absolutely massive. Riccioni's not stepped in, and their second choice props have struggled in behind them as well. So I think that's the way we've got to go. I expect us to go fully loaded again. I expect us to go 6-2 split again, and I expect us to try and keep it very, very tight at the Rec and you know, just try and beat the spirit out of them a little bit. But it's going to be very, very tough. But yeah, Friday night lights at the Rec, anything can happen.
Absolutely. Tom, thank you for joining me. Looking forward to having you back here to talk all things blue, black and white. Thank you for listening. If you're going to the Rec, have a wonderful time. We'll be back next week in person to talk all about it. Check out Tom Dunn's Baps next to the Swift Path if you are going. And whatever happens, stick behind the boys through thick.